This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
I'm Diana, and I have trichotillomania. I've had it since I was 7 years old. I pull my lashes and brows. The brows started a couple years after the lashes, and I've been in recovery a couple of times. And right now I'm not. I'm going through a rough patch, but you caught me on a good week because I had a pretty good pulling week last week. It wasn't pull-free, but it was close, and I'll take it.
Do you remember the moment you started pulling your lashes?
Oh my God, I actually do. Do most people? That's like, it's kind of a funny thing. I was in my first grade class and I remember having it, the eyelash in my fingers and kind of rolling it around and looking. I don't know if you had those little pencil trays in your cubby desk. I was looking at that pencil tray and thinking, what if I filled that up with these? It's just the most strange. I go back to that a lot because it wasn't like, what if I ripped out all my eyelashes and was bald and like made everybody upset? It was just, what if I had a bunch of these? I like them.
When you started pulling and noticing that, hey, I like this, did it kind of go from 0 to 100? Did people notice right away? Did you have gaps? How did it kind of go for you?
I was so young, so it's hard to remember specifically, but I know pretty quickly my mom noticed that something was wrong. And I would say by second grade, there was pretty much nothing. And I think that's why I progressed up to my eyebrows, because it's like a similar sensation. I've never been like a scalp puller or other areas. It's really been concentrated around my eyes. But I was pretty much, my mom called me a moon face child when I was younger. So 0 to 100 is a good way to describe it.
At what point did you find out there was a name for the behavior you were doing?
Not until I had a computer in my room in high school and I finally just Googled it one day. I was probably 16 or 17. And then finding out that there was a name was actually really liberating. It made me feel so much better. I remember telling my best friend, like, hey, did you know that this thing that I do, it's not just this wacky thing that I do, it's actually a disorder and it has a name. It doesn't have a medication though. Womp womp. It's probably the most asked question on the subreddit too. Is there a medication? And I'm always like, I'm sorry, guys, not yet.
I wish, you know, that one pill cure all, please.
Yeah, I've had so many doctors be like, oh, I had success with one patient with this one medication, and I've tried it, and just there has not been a medication that has worked for me. I'm so happy for people who have had success with, you know, various different things, but not for me.
I remember being in high school and taking like 5 different pills a day at one point. And like, we're tweaking the dosages. We're only later, they told me one of them was a mood stabilizer. And they're like, oh, one's for focusing, one's for because you're too up. Now you have to go to sleep. Like, all these different things. I look up the mood stabilizer. Don't you know it's an antipsychotic?
Yeah, mood stabilizer is kind of the fun word or the softer word for antipsychotic, most typically. I've been there. I've been there. I've taken so many different things. Things for OCD, things for depression, things for anxiety. There doesn't seem to be any like chemical mix that makes it better for me. I don't know what your experience has been, but like, ugh.
Yeah, I was the same. I ended up weaning off. It was like, you know, 11th grade and then senior year of high school. I was trying all these things. Then, of course, like I'm on heavy dosages now. So like I have to wean off and slowly take my time. And I was like, yeah, I'm never doing that again. Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm never doing that again.
Oh, my sympathies.
When you were younger and you had missing eyebrows and eyelashes, what was the response from your peers?
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. Most of my friends pretended not to notice or were generally really cool about it, but I definitely got bullied. I specifically remember in sixth grade, this boy that I liked running up to me and pointing at me in front of a bunch of people and being like, she's ugly. And yeah, the face palm is, it's appropriate. You know, I had girls asking, like, say all kinds of nasty things, people asking me questions, like, why don't you have eyelashes? And I remember thinking, even at that age, like, it's so not your business. Why are you bothering me about this? But the people who I had around that were kind to me were so kind. So that's kind of what kept me going.
I don't understand how people, I don't think I've ever once in my life, even before having trichotillomania, where I am now hyper focused on what people are thinking, and like I would never just scream something across the room about somebody that they can't change within a second. You know, if there's something in someone's teeth, do that privately. They can change that and it helps. What, you think my eyebrows are going to grow back now that you said that?
Right? I just, it's so strange to me. And I don't know if we just have a different empathy level, but some people are so concerned with other people's issues. Mind your business, man. It doesn't help. I'm already so self-conscious. Like, I'm a young girl and I don't have eyelashes, and that's devastating. And I already, like, girls already, like, have so many body issues to begin with. So many of them feel ugly, fat, like, whatever. And then to have this like medical situation that people can very clearly notice. I don't need people to call me ugly, bro. Like, I'm already calling myself ugly. Or I was when I was younger, you know. I'm more at peace now, I would say.
What are some ways that you would try to, if you did, you know, try to cover it up, or things that you would say like comebacks to people who would point it out?
This was so devastating to me. I was actually a really punchy kid. But if people noticed the eyelash thing, I would shrink, which is strange. Like, I was the brave one in the friends group. I would totally call people out if they were being mean to my friends. So throughout grade school, I just kind of really hoped people couldn't see. And by high school, I started using eyeliner. So bless the makeup. And yeah, eyeliner, eyebrow pencils, fake eyelashes, just trying to kind of give myself a more, I don't want to say normal appearance, but kind of see the person that I might see if I did not have this BFRB.
I remember Paramore, you know, in the early 2000s. Obviously, they were huge. They're still huge. And they were my favorite band. And I was like, great, I can wear really dark eye makeup because I love Hayley Williams and I'm an emo girl now. But I really also wanted it to cover things up so that people wouldn't notice. And it was like my security blanket.
Yeah, I was a teenager in the very early 2000s. And so that heavy dark eye makeup was my jammy jam jam. I did the eyeliner, then the black shadow kind of softened it up. And yeah, it was really easy to get away with for a long time. So most people didn't notice, truly. Like, I would tell people after a while and they'd be like, oh, re really? Oh, shoot. But yeah, gotta love that early 2000s dark makeup trend. I miss it. Bring it back.
During your lifetime with trichotillomania, have you had moments where, hey, it's been a few months, things are growing in? Yeah, I pull here and there, but I'm not really noticing any baldness.
Yeah, my senior year of college, actually, which you would think would have been the stressiest time. It was my last semester, but I had a good group of friends. I was taking a medication at the time. It was my first psychiatric medication, and I'm not sure if at the time it helped or if it was just sort of placebo effect or what. But I was busy. I was running a lot. I was active. I had so much to do. So I grew my eyelashes back. Like, you can see in my college graduation pictures, I've got lashes growing out of my face. And I think back to that time, especially like now that I'm going through another sort of down phase where I'm pulling a lot, I'm really stressed out. I'm like, okay, what was it about that time that enabled me to kind of replace the behavior or feel better?
I think that way too, because I've never really been pull free, right? I just will pull to the point where it's like maybe a general thinning. It's not to like completion. Like all the eyebrows aren't gone again. All the eyelashes aren't gone again. And I wonder like what was the change? For me, it was weird because I went to the same school from first grade to 12th grade, and
Oh,
during real weird during that time
wow.
during that time I had moments like that. And I'm like, I'm in the same place. Like I had the same kids with me the whole time. Like what was it? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's really fun when you go a few days and you think, oh wow, I haven't pulled. You know, I've been really busy with my new job situation over the past few weeks, and I think that is one of those things. And I started actually doing embroidery while I watch TV. And that's it makes my fingers actually tired. It's just this nice fiddly, you know, there's string, there's a lot of pinching. And I think that that's one thing that's really helped me over the past week. Again, I'm not totally pull free. I'm still finding strays, but it is interesting to have those moments and just be like, Go me. I did it. Even for a day. What I love is like when I don't think about it for a few days. That's the thing I want. That's why I aim for pull free, because I don't want this to be a thing that's in my brain all the time. And I don't know that it's possible given our current understanding of it. It doesn't seem that way, but I aim to have more stretches of time where I'm just not thinking about pulling or how much I've pulled or any of it, you know?
I recently was in a study where they would send you alerts, every so often, maybe every 3 hours, and it would ask you questions. Hey, how long have you been pulling for? How many hairs do you think you pulled? What was your mood? And only when I did that did I realize, oh, wait a minute. I'm actually not pulling as much as I thought because it was so often in the day. And I don't know about you, and I'll ask you, my pulling trend, it seems to be a lot of evening pulling where, I'm decompressing from my job. At the end of the day, I'm tired, I'm sleepy, all these things. And so when I have a large pulling session at night, I kind of feel like it's the whole day. I was like, oh, that was a rough day. But when in actuality, I haven't pulled, I haven't pulled, I haven't pulled, I haven't pulled. And then, okay, there's three or four hairs. I'm able to now celebrate these wins. It was a kind of eye-opening for me.
That's really interesting. I wish I could find that trend, because I've been listening to a few of your other episodes and people who say like, yeah, I figured it out. I do it at night. I do it in the morning. I do it when this is happening. And I have not yet found that nugget of information. That study sounds really interesting.
It was through Habit Aware. It was.
Oh, it's a habit aware. Awesome. And we should mention that we met through Anila, who we love. I will say, and I don't work for Habit Aware, but I met Anila through the work that I do, and I swear by those things. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't have the awareness, and the data tracking, I think, is still really valuable, even if you do have the awareness and, you know, do still maybe pull if the vibrations are going off, but you're still getting that information, and you can still, you know, work with a therapist to look at that information and figure things out. It's something I say to people a lot, you know, like even if your therapist isn't necessarily trained in BFRBs, there's a lot you can do together.
And I like that you brought up the fact that, yes, sometimes you do pull even after you get the vibration. But what I like to say is that that's your choice now. At first, it was trichotillomania's choice. It was the one that, had your hand come up here and you're scanning, you're looking for it. When you get the vibration and you're brought to awareness, now it's like, okay, now it's my choice. I'm here now. I'm alerted. I'm looking around. I'm thinking, do I do this or not? It gives you that second to make that choice. And if you do make that choice, it's okay. But now we can talk about ways that we can make other choices and things like that.
Right. Like you need that dopamine. You need that little release. Okay, that's fine. Like, what else can we do? Maybe we need to change what we're up to. Maybe if you're sitting reading a book, you need to get some action in. You need to go move around, take a walk, do the dishes. Who knows? That's a big one for me, sitting and reading. I don't know why I'm not stressed out when I'm reading. See me when I was a kid being like, do you pull? Are you doing this because you're anxious? And I remember just saying yes, because I just wanted her to stop asking me about it. And the truth was, no, like sometimes definitely if I'm feeling anxious, like even when I was at work at school, like with little kids all around me, I felt my hand creep up during a really stressful situation. And I went, oh gosh, oh dear, stop, 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 stop. But then again, when I'm like reading or watching TV or bored or tired, oh gosh, tired is a big one. We can't just say it's an anxiety response. It's so much bigger than that.
And tell me if this is true for you. When you're tired, I feel like my whole entire eyelid gets that itchy feeling that is the same signal as when I want to pull. And so it's like, am I tired or am I wanting to pull right now? It's hard for me to almost differentiate.
You know, I don't get that like itchy, tingly feeling. I've seen a lot of people discuss that sensation, and I don't feel that as much. For me, it's like, am I trying to keep myself awake by creating a sensation? That's interesting, though. It's just like I'm very aware of my eyeballs when I'm tired. Like I want to close them, especially tired driving. Ooh, that's the worst one, right? The car is the no-no zone.
Yeah, so what are some other places you mentioned when you're reading? And that's because reading is so soothing and it's great and your hand has nothing to do, so it's just let me just feel some things. And then the car is huge. What else maybe, or where else?
Here at my desk, most certainly. So yeah, I've identified desk, car, bed, couch. Like those are the big ones, the big four. But I do have various methods that I've developed. So at work, I've got finger cots. I don't know if you've ever used them. They are one of my favorite barrier methods. They look really absurd, but then you've just got, and even if you can still get traction with this finger cot on, like it's kind of a physical reminder, like we're not doing this right now. We're at work.
I love those. What other things do you use for like the car and things like that?
Gloves for sleeping. So if I'm sleepy tired and I know that I'm going through a pulling phase in the evenings, I'll put on lotion and then gloves, which is really nice. Fake eyelashes actually work as their own barrier because you can't really be getting in there when they're right on top of your non-existent lash line or, partially existent lash line, depending. That's actually one of my favorites. Sunglasses can help, but you can just kind of bump right under them. Castor oil. If I'm not around other people, and I don't mind looking really greasy, I'll just put a bunch of castor oil on my eyebrows and my lashes so that they're slippery. Lotion on my hands, or even like an essential oil. So something really pungent, like lavender or tea tree. So then I get my hand up there and I'm like, oh, woo. Tea tree especially has kind of a vapor that'll kind of irritate you a little bit. So you'll get that. Yeah, I've had trichotillomania for 30 years. So I've come up with a lot of various ways to stop myself over time.
What are some things that you've tried that haven't worked for you?
Medications we discussed, which is really disappointing. And again, there are people who have had success, so I don't want to say like patently like they don't work. For me specifically, perhaps because I have comorbidities like ADHD and depression, there is no chemical cocktail that's worked for me. Just stop or sit on your hands does not work, obviously. I've tried CBT, but I do not know that I was with somebody who was really prepared to do that for somebody with trichotillomania. So I can't say whether or not that is a success. I'm actually working with a new therapist right now who just read The Hair Pulling Problem, and she's amazing. I gave her a copy of the book and she was like, "May I keep this?" And I said, "Yes." She gave me a fresh copy because she'd written in it. And we're going to start working with some of those tools and tricks. So I look forward to sharing my potential successes there.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. What do you say to yourself, or how do you speak to yourself when you try something and maybe it doesn't work?
I get really down on myself. I will be totally honest. I have a really bad negative self-talk habit, and I think a lot of us do. But I do try to remind myself that, if I live the rest of my life with this without having a full set of eyelashes or big fluffy eyebrows, like there are way worse things. I have a good life. This is one actually fairly small thing. So I try to remind myself that over and over again, like this is not the end of the world. This is one piece of your life, and you've done great before. You can do it again. That's a big one.
Because of your trichotillomania, have you ever felt like you had to avoid certain events or activities?
Yeah, I mean, I was scared to go away to college and have roommates and have them see me in the morning before I could do my early 2000s super punk makeup. I got really into waterproof makeup, waterproof eyeliner. So I didn't keep myself away from activities, but I will say I did want to be an actor when I was younger. I was really into theater, and I told myself, you can't go into acting like this. People won't accept you, and I talked myself out of it, and I kind of wish I hadn't, because I would have probably had a really good time or had a bad time. I mean, people's Hollywood stories, but you know what I mean? Like I did talk myself all the way out of that, just thinking like, you have BFRB, you can't do this. Which, if there's people out there listening now who are younger who are thinking that themselves, don't think that. There are actresses with trichotillomania. We've seen people all over the place with it, and I think we're finally learning more about it. So I hope people don't self-select out of things anymore because of it.
And I think what's great about people sharing, especially, Amy Schumer is a big name that has it in her show. She was saying like, oh yeah, all of my hair right now that you see, hair extensions. There's things like that where beauty industry has horrible, horrible sides, but there's also some great sides for people like us who feel as though they want to be more comfortable in their skin if they have their eyebrows done or extensions with their hair or lashes. And I am happy about that. But also, it's like a slippery slope. Do I cover forever, even though I'm comfortable now? What's your mindset on that?
I think it's really personal, and I love it when I see people out there who are just living with whatever state their trich is in. And for me, I've always loved makeup. I'm also an artist. I like to put on different colors and different shapes. And for me, it's just about my own comfort with myself. I want to look in the mirror and see the person who doesn't have trichotillomania. And I will tell you that getting my eyebrows microbladed was one of the greatest things that I did for my own, I don't want to say like comfort, but kind of, you know, like I used to wake up and just see this like barefaced goblin person. That's what I would call myself, barefaced goblin person. And then I would get up and I would have these like these brows that I hadn't seen in so long. And it would just make me feel so much better about myself. I would go, look at you. Hey, there's your face. So yeah, I think it's just it's everybody's own comfort. It's if you're wanting to look in the mirror and see that person, go ahead and do it. If you don't want to deal with makeup all the time, then don't. You know, you don't have to adhere to anybody else's standards. And I think what's wonderful now, especially as social media has taken off, is we've really seen different types of beauty, different types of faces, different everything. And so you may really want to have the big fluffy Brooke Shields eyebrows, but not that long ago, it was really in to tweeze your eyebrows really thin. That was actually kind of a saving grace for me because so many girls my age just tweezed them real thin, like Gwen Stefani, and they don't have as many either.
Something similar is the idea of having to share your experience. I too feel like it's very personal. You know, just because you have a disorder doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be the person sharing with everybody and doing social media and things like that. It whatever makes you happy is what's most important, I feel.
Absolutely. It's something that I've asked myself over the years because I've been continuously drawn into talking about it, even though I thought for a while, like, that's not, you know, there are Barbara Lallys out there doing their thing and I don't have to join the ranks. But then I see that there are still so many people in the subreddit who feel alone, who just discovered one of the most popular posts we have, one of the most frequent posts we get is, I just learned that this is a thing. I just discovered the word trichotillomania thanks to this subreddit. So as much as I think that we've cracked through and everybody gets it now, I have to remind myself that no, it's not. There's a dearth of information. There aren't that many Barbara Lallys out there sharing their stories and making people feel more comfortable in their skin. I mean, the comments I see on your Instagram just make me just so warm and fuzzy inside. So I think that if you can share, great. And if you don't want to, you know, that's okay too. It's personal.
I had somebody, first of all, thank you so much. You're so sweet. Like, I'm gonna start crying. But
No.
I had a comment today, and it was this person, and they were like, I usually lurk on these videos, but this one I had to comment on because it's just too true. And it was so funny. I was like, I'm happy you're here because, yeah, they're just like, I'm lurking on this usually, but this one I had to actually say something.
Isn't that wild? I think that's why the subreddit is so popular because I looked and it's the biggest single social media community surrounded by or centered on trichotillomania that we have. And I thought, well, why? And then ding, because Reddit is completely anonymous. You know, if even if you are part of a Facebook group, that will show up. And if you're commenting on Instagrams, that's going to show up. And it's wild to me how many people are still in lurk mode. And I love that more people feel comfortable coming out and commenting because your content is so funny. So that's good.
Tell us how you got into Reddit and tell us everything you're allowed to tell us.
Oh my gosh, I know. I want to say like I had been sort of reticent to talk about it because most Reddit moderators want to be, remain anonymous because Reddit can be the Wild West. But I've been doing the moderating job since I want to say 2017 when the group was at about 15 or 16,000. We've now grown to about 34. And it started because I wrote to somebody, one of the mods, and said, hey, we need an FAQ. And they were like, great, do you want to be a mod and write it? And from there, I just sort of helped steer the community. And what's wonderful about that subreddit is I think most people have a really negative perception of Reddit as a social media website. For me, though, our specific community is so gentle and loving and kind. And I've seen my job over the years as just maintain that. Just make sure that people feel safe coming here, asking questions because it's anonymous, because it can't really be tracked back to them in real life. There's a lot more safety there. As we've gotten bigger, there's been a little bit more to manage. We've had to say, swing the ban hammer on people posting images of their children, because that's a privacy issue. We've had to have some serious discussions as a community about whether or not we allow activating or triggering content to be posted. So we're talking like regrowth, pulled hairs, follicles, things like that. So we've had to really like continue to shift and pivot as we've grown. But it's been really wonderful because for the most part, I think it's been inspiring. People share their success stories, people share that they're struggling. When I see people sharing something distressing, and I get an alert like, hey, you need to check in on this. I check in, and it's been maybe an hour or so, and there's already like 15 comments of just, you're okay. You're okay. We love you. This is not your whole life. It's going to be fine. And I live for that. Like that's really heartening.
It's beautiful because so many of us, one, we never really meet anybody until much later, usually. And it's through, maybe even sharing our experience, maybe that's brought us others. But if we don't do that, we self-isolate and we don't ever talk about it ever. And so how can we find the support and love that we need if we don't even know it exists? We just think, okay, I can't talk about this.
I know. And I'm still seeing like this constant uptick of people coming into the subreddit and saying, oh my God, here are all my people. I did not know. And so when I have moments of frustration when somebody's getting in my DMs and being nasty, I just have to remind myself, like, okay, but for all those few people who do that, there are thousands of other people who are just glad that there's a safe place to come chat and to meet other people. And, we've had Discords pop up as a result of it. We've had pull free-a-thons. We've had all kinds of like really lovely stuff just in that little community of people. We've kept it really open. We have it really, really open because sometimes people will create a dummy account just to come in, so it's not even traced back to their anonymous Reddit account. Like that's that's the level that we're at. So you just have to make a Reddit account and join. I think you can just view it online as a person not logged in. And I mean, yeah, I would like to do more. I've been chatting with Anila about how we make it more of a formal thing. But I also want to honor the fact that it's just kind of this safe, anonymous space for people to just come and ask questions, or just to say like, I pulled a lot tonight and I need some encouragement, or hey, has this worked for you, or have you tried this medication, or how do I talk to my therapist, or what do I say to my parents? And we do also have parents coming and asking, what do I do with my children? And those are some of my favorites because people will share like, here's what you don't say, here's what will help, and there's a really genuine dialogue there, I think, and we're helping people. We've also actually gotten a lot of research requests, which I get a little bit sticky about because it is a self-selected group of people. And I don't want them to feel like a bunch of guinea pigs. So we do have some requirements for people who would like to do research through us. We ask them to provide some information and things like that.
What would be your advice to parents who have children with BFRBs?
I think my first thing would be definitely seek out a therapist. I very strongly feel that trichotillomania is a symptom of something perhaps larger. And what I've seen in my own journeys into the community is that it's often comorbid with severe anxiety or depression or both. So just getting a GP in there or a psychiatrist, child psychiatrist, just to check and make sure that there isn't anything else that needs to be addressed immediately is really important. And then just approaching it with compassion, and my mom's probably going to listen to this, so I don't want her to be feeling some type of way about what I've had to say. But she did her best, and she made like sticker charts for me, or like had me wear gloves to bed. And I think helping to find those little methods to help people out, because I think probably if you can catch it in childhood, there's a better chance that you can create those habits and those lifestyle changes that will enable people to have success. But I think the most important thing is just know that this isn't going to ruin your kid's life. It's not. It's really not. It's scary. And I worry about my own son now because I know that there's probably a genetic component to it and he might catch me doing it. But I've also, my husband has said, like, what is the worst thing that happens? Say he develops it. What's the worst thing? Like, look at you. You're fine. Like, he'll be fine. Your kids will be fine. I accepted a lot of things that I didn't need to accept when I was younger. Because of my BFRB. Like, I was in an emotionally abusive relationship in high school because I was pretty sure that nobody else would love me, things like that. So I think parents just need to know, like, just love them up. Just love them up. Just support them and love them up and remind them that this is not everything. And if you, the parent, fall apart and get freaked out by it, guess what? Your kid's gonna fall apart and get freaked out. If you lead from a place of like, this is okay, this is a medical condition, we're gonna help you out, and it's not the end of the world, they're gonna take that from you. Kids are like little sponges for emotions. I know it's hard.
What is a piece of advice that you would give someone who wants to start sharing about their BFRB?
Just do it. Just do it. There is nothing bad's gonna happen to you. I promise you. Like, it feels so scary when you're young and you are first discovering this whole thing and you feel so alone. Like, it took me so long to meet other people who had BFRB. But if you want to share about it, find a way to share. You know, I'm a writer. I like to write about it. I'm gonna start writing, with Anila about it a little bit. But if you want to just get on TikTok and show people how to do your makeup, if you like to do your makeup a certain way, or just talk about what it feels like, or talk about, what you wish your parents would have said. I mean, just find that way to express yourself. And I guarantee you, there's going to be other people out there who want to hear what you have to say.
How would you describe your relationship with trichotillomania now versus when you first started?
Oh, now I'm like at peace. Which feels so funny to say because I have maybe like five eyelashes on one eye and like seven on the other. And, it can be distressing at times, but for the most part, I just accept that it's a part of my life. And yeah, when I was younger, it felt world ending. It felt like it was this one thing that I couldn't conquer that was holding me back from all these other things. And here I am on the other side of all that stuff. And I have a successful career and I have a family and a loving husband and three horrible cats and, my own house and a garden and like all of these successes that I've gone through. And the trichotillomania has just kind of been this little gremlin, this little like bleh thing that I thought was going to ruin everything, but turns out has just kind of been there for the whole ride. So yeah, peace.
Do you have any words of wisdom for listeners who are listening right now?
I don't know if I have words of wisdom. I mean, I will say maybe this isn't a word of wisdom, but I feel a lot of hope right now for people with trichotillomania. A lot of hope. It was the 90s when I developed it, and there wasn't a whole lot of information out there. But I think over the past 20 years, there's been a real shift. And I think that's come with the greater focus on mental health in general. But I see there are leaders out there now like you and Anila, and we are creating a lot more awareness. And there is a much greater push to find effective treatment, to potentially find an effective medication, and to just help people through this. So, I'm not going to say it's a great time to have trichotillomania, but it certainly is a better time to have it. There's a lot more out there for people, there's so much more support. And I feel comfort knowing that, like, there aren't going to be baby Dianas out there who suffer in silence and have boys call them ugly and shrink away. And, they're going to have this whole community out there to have their backs. That gives me hope.
Thank you.